pay for Chase.
Abstract number one. A clinical prediction rule to identify febrile infants 60 days and younger at low risk for serious bacterial infections. And this is by Nate Cooperman. He is the first author on this et al. In JAMA Pediatrics. So the workup of the febrile infant is always stress-provoking and, quite frankly, very difficult. Among febrile infants 60 days and younger, 8 to 13% have serious bacterial infections, if we define those things as urinary tract infections, bacteremia, and bacterial meningitis, kind of clumped together. Now, under 28 days, we traditionally full-court press these patients, right? They get labs, antibiotics, lumbar puncture, admission. Between 29 and 60 days, I think we all sweat a little bit more because these sort of guidelines for us become a little bit more gray and we sort of do a partial workup, or some of us will still continue to do all of it. It becomes a little bit more, you know, provider right. dependent.
And people start splitting hairs too. They're like, well, you know, what about at 6 weeks and 5.5 weeks? And maybe he came out a day early and it's
awful. Yeah, but prematurity plays a role. Vaccination status plays a role. Yeah, it's all these things.
But we're kind of making it up in that zone pretty significantly.
So the real problem here is that clinical observation alone frequently fails to identify infants with serious bacterial infections, and no single test in isolation performs well enough for us to rely on it. So that being said, the overall incidence of SBIs has been steadily on the decline over time. So if we really maintain an overly conservative strategy, workup and admission strategy, it's going to result in lots of unnecessary admissions and increased hospital-related complications and, at some point, antimicrobial resistance. Now, here the PCARN group sought to both derive and validate an accurate prediction rule in a cohort of febrile infants less than 60 days of age to identify those that we can say are at low risk of an SBI. This was a multi-center prospective study of infants with a temperature of at least 38 degrees Celsius in the ED, in the clinic, or at home, excluding those who were critically ill, who had already received antibiotics, and those with very high-risk features in their past medical history, like they were 6 weeks, you know, premature or something like that.
Yes, all the patients just were discharged with bacterial meningitis right, 2 days before.
Or they have some chronic underlying condition that we already know about. Mm-hmm. So all the patients got labs, blood cultures, urine cultures, and the LP was done at the discretion of the treating physician. The SBI they defined in this sample as bacterial meningitis, bacteremia, or urinary tract infection. So they enrolled almost 2,000 kids in this study. And at the end of the day, they had a few exclusions. They wanted to look at a few lab criteria. So they had just about 1,800 with all the data necessary to analyze and complete the assessments for SBI. They then divided these 1,800 patients into two different groups, a derivation group for the rule and a validation group. And they did that at a random nature. So, in total, SBIs were present in about 10% of kids, just under that, actually, including 1.4% with bacteremia, about 8% with UTIs, and 0.5% with bacterial meningitis. A little under a percent had a couple of these things, so concomitant infections. As an FYI, this is just sort of against state of play, over 3/4 of these patients had LPs performed, including about 70% of the infants in that 29 to 60 day range. So we're still being incredibly conservative with these under 60 dayers. And I think that's okay generally. On univariate analysis, infants with SBI were more likely to be 28 days or younger, have higher temperatures, higher white blood cell counts with also ANCs, and higher procalcitonin levels. Now, with these, they sort of took these univariate analyses and performed a multivariate. They actually did something called a recursive partitioning analysis algorithm.
Yeah, that's the more effective way of deriving these sort of decision rules as opposed to sticking them into logistic models. That's the sort of state-of-the-art manner.
Right. So what that does, essentially, is it comes up with not only the right prediction variables, but the optimal thresholds for each number predictor to plug into like a decision tree. So when they did that, the decision tree retained three variables: the UA, the ANC, and the procalcitonin. Now, specifically, you were called low risk if you had a negative UA, a serum procalcitonin of less than 1.71 nanograms per milliliter, and an ANC of less than 4.09. So, in the validation cohort, that's what they came up with for their derivation. They put this rule to play, and they found the sensitivity of the rule to be about 98%. With a specificity of 60%. One infant with bacteremia and two infants with UTIs were misclassified by the rule. No patients with bacterial meningitis were missed, but there weren't that many patients with bacterial meningitis. When the patients with UTIs alone were removed from the cohort, so they're like, all right, let's see how well this thing does at, you know, not the UTI patients, but trying to predict everybody else who had the more serious things potentially, the prediction rule performed with similar accuracy for identifying patients with either bacteremia or bacterial meningitis. Now, some minor limitations here include that this was a convenient sample. This was not a consecutive sample of kids at all these sites. It was based on research assistant availability, and they did not look at other potential biomarkers, right? They just looked at a procalcitonin.
And the white count.
And the white count. But I mean, more crazier things, like, you know, like an ESR or something else. But one pretty major limitation is they did not include serious viral infections, so things like HSV encephalitis. So they didn't look at any viral stuff. They also didn't include overall viral testing, like RSV. How did that play into things? But that seems okay to me because we covered another paper on EMA not that long ago that showed that a viral test result didn't really do much to change your pretest probability of a SBI. So I think this is pretty interesting stuff on a really important topic, but obviously there's a lot to discuss
here. Yeah, there's a lot to digest here because on the one hand, I think that bottom line for kids that are sort of pushing to that 60 days range, this is probably right. That, you know, we've covered other papers that are somewhat similar to this that say like, look, you do some inflammatory biomarker tests and some use procalcitonin, some have ANCs, some have CRPs, et cetera. And if the kid looks good and all those things are quiet, then the kid probably doesn't have anything serious and you don't need to LP him. We've seen that in other ones. So this falls in line with that general body of knowledge. I do get nervous when you have like really weird cut points like 1.71, you know, and ANC of 4.09 and things like that. And the reason I get nervous is that I worry about labs, like, you know, how similar labs are, et cetera. And I'd love to see some analyses here of like how sensitive this rule is to sort of minor changes in those cut points. Like, let's just say it was 2, because that's like the procalcitonin level is 2, because that's like a more normal cut point, a 0.5 or 2. What happens to the rule under those circumstances? Because if it's super, super, super sensitive, then I lose the utility a little bit. Then the other thing, and maybe it's in the paper, I didn't read the paper, I read the abstract. Can you tell, did they look at specifically the 0 to 28 day range? Because, you know, for me, at this point, I think you need to have your head examined if you're not LPing a kid that's under 28 days. I don't care if their procalcitonin is, you know, 0.1 or whatever else. And so I'm just curious about how the rule performed in those different age cohorts.
You know, I looked pretty closely for that, and I actually didn't see them sort of divided out by the 28 days or less or 29 to 60 to see how well it performed in the two different cohorts. About a third of their sample was in that younger age range. So they did have a lot of kids, like, you know, 600-700 kids, like in that particular cohort, but they didn't say. So we don't know.
Okay.
But, you know, I totally agree. It is hard with these like sort of funky numbers and stuff. I think they're onto something here. Mm-hmm. I really, really do. But obviously we need to wait till this is externally validated before it goes public.
Yeah.
Bottom line.
This is a very well-conducted study on a large group of febrile infants less than 60 days, showing that they were able to identify a low-risk cohort for SBI using 3 simple objective variables. This has the unique perks of not relying on subjective assessments or requiring an LP to use it. But importantly, this rule must be subject to external validation before we can use it. So for now, still take a lot of care with these patients, particularly those less than 28 days old.